Welcome to the Productivity Show, the Asian Efficiency Podcast dedicated to helping you make the most out of your time, intention, energy, and focus. My name is Tan. I'll be your host today. Mike is off today, so I'm taking over, but I'm not doing it alone. I have here Brooks with me, our resident operations guy in the company. How's it going, Brooks?
It's going excellent. Happy to be back here on the podcast.
I don't remember the last time you and I did a podcast together, so it's good to have you back.
Yeah, it's been a while. I was just thinking about that.
As you might have read in the title of this podcast episode, we're going to be talking about how you can plan the perfect day and week. There are actually five specific things you want to pay attention to as you plan your week, and we'll cover those in depth today. This episode was actually inspired by a blog post that I wrote recently called How I Plan My Week as a CEO, which we published on the AE blog. We'll have a link to it in the show notes. In the post, I outline exactly how I plan my week, which has changed quite a bit over the years. In the beginning, I was very methodical, but as I've grown into the CEO role and my life has changed quite a bit, so has my planning. This doesn't mean that you can't take the same framework and apply it to your own life. In fact, you totally can. You don't have to be a CEO to make the same planning process even work for you or anything like that. Anybody can apply some of the principles we're going to be talking about today, but I'm going to share some of the things that I've learned over the years from planning my ideal day, my ideal week, and then you can take little bits and pieces of it. And I have Brooks with me here today so he can help out and provide some perspective on that as well, so you can learn from us together as we were talking about how we plan our weeks ahead. So are you good to go, Brooks?
I'm good to go. Let's plan our weeks.
Well, so for me, planning has changed quite a bit over the years. And as most people, if you've listened to the Productivity Show before, we have a bunch of episodes already on how you could plan your ideal day and how your ideal week should look like. And we can link to those episodes in the show notes below. But today, I'm going to take a different spin on it because I used to be a methodical planner. I don't know about you, Brooks, but I used to be the kind of guy who would sit down Sunday night and plan the ideal week ahead and know exactly what would happen minute by minute, play by play. And I'm kind of curious to hear from your perspective. Has your planning changed at all over the last couple of years?
It has, but it's gone the other way. I used to be the exact opposite of that. I'd just be like, oh, you know, whatever. I'll make sure to get everything done, but I wouldn't do so much planning ahead of time. And that's something I've had to add some structure to. So it's kind of funny. We've came from the opposite direction. But we're kind of emulating in similar places.
Yeah, my planning has changed in the sense that, okay, in the beginning, I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. And I just said, okay, let's put these big rocks on my calendar and then just go from there, right? And it used to be very goal-oriented. And what I mean with that is, okay, if I had a perfect day or a perfect week, I would have achieved this particular outcome. Maybe it was a project that I got done. Maybe it was a video script that I got done. Maybe it was a blog post or something small. And that worked great over the years. And if you've been following us for a while, you know that we love goal setting. We love achieving our goals. But then I want to say maybe 2012-ish, I want to say. That's when things changed a little bit because then we became more process oriented. So instead of having a goal for the whole week, we had a process for the whole week. So instead of saying, okay, I want to, let's say, write a blog post and have it published by Friday, then that changed to becoming a process to say, okay, what if I can just spend 30 minutes a day writing and then finishing up that blog post that way? So I became more focused on the process rather than the goal. Now I did that for a while, but now it's completely different. Now I actually have five metrics that I look for, which are completely different from what I used to do. So I'm curious to hear, Brooks, from your perspective, what exactly has changed for you?
Yeah, well, like I said, I spent a lot of the different roles that I've had over the years as quite reactive. And so I'd have this fire to put out, that fire to put out. I would have some big goals that I'd be working towards, but it would be kind of reacting to getting there. So then I did the same thing, actually. I became a lot more process-oriented, a lot more, okay, these are the things that I should be doing to get towards those things I need to have done. And that's kind of where I am now. So I'm actually really, despite the fact that I'm on this podcast, I'm actually really fascinated to dive into this concept that you've really shifted to with the kind of more long-term thinking, I guess I'd say.
Yeah, this is the shift I've made maybe in the last year and a half or so. And I'm just teasing it out here as people are listening, because you might be wondering at this point, Tim, what are you talking about? And I'm going to get to it, I promise. But I just want you to understand how the planning process has changed. And I hope you start to identify yourself as well in this as your role starts to change in the company. Not only am I speaking to Brooks, but also people listening to this, because it's okay if your planning process changes, because as life changes, as your responsibility changes, other things will change as well. And planning is one of them, right? Just because the way I built my habits a couple of years ago was different than it is today. And it's because my life is just different. And so same thing applies for planning or how you are productive on a day-to-day basis. You know, if you have kids now versus no kids a couple of years ago, you know, your life is completely different. That requires different rituals and different ways you approach things. And same thing here. Like as I grew into the CEO role, my processes and things that I do day-to-day are much different than what they were. And so planning was just one of those things. And I know how people are so obsessed about their calendars and planning and how they want their ideal future to look like and how they're going to get there. So I just want to shed some light on how that has changed for me.
Yeah. Before you jump into your thing, as we often do, we're recording live with members of our dojo. So I asked them how they do their planning. So a couple of interesting feedback here. Curtis says he takes Friday and plans out the whole week and gives certain tasks to certain days. So there, it's kind of like the theming thing. Lisa kind of does the same thing with the big rocks. So make sure that there's an important thing for each day and then kind of reacts the other way. So those are two examples of what people in the dojo do.
Yeah, I think those are great ways to do things. And it goes back to what you just said, being proactive about it.
Yep.
And that's the main thing, is that you want to be proactive about it. You do not want to be reactive about it. Being reactive means you show up on Monday and you just let the week play out and hopefully things turn out to be okay. And if it does, you're in luck. If it doesn't, it's kind of your fault for not really planning for the things you wanted to do.
The thing about doing it in a reactive fashion is it can work really, really well to a point. And you look awesome to a point, because you're always the hero, right? You're always, whatever comes up, you always solve it and you look awesome. But eventually your role, for many people, eventually the role will change, or the complexity will just get so much that just doesn't work out very well. So you might as well get ahead of the game, even if it's working pretty well for you now.
Yeah, and I like the big rocks approach, because even if you just set one or two or maybe even three rocks for the week, at least you know that if you achieve them, you had a productive week.
I like Curtis' approach. He says he's more free in the afternoon. He's a maker in the morning, manager in the afternoon, referencing that famous Paul Graham essay. He calls it the mullet schedule.
I like that.
Yeah.
So the idea here is, okay, if you can be proactive about it, what are some of the approaches that you can take? So we've mentioned here the big rocks that people have mentioned here in the Slack room as part of the dojo. And that's one of the things you can do. If you can put a big rock in front of you and say, okay, this is the main thing I'm going to work on this week, that's great, right? So that's kind of similar to setting a goal for the week. It's basically the same thing. The second thing we just talked about earlier was, okay, what if you can create a process around something and you just focus on the process and you let the outcome kind of like appear for itself whenever it is fitted for you? So this is a little bit different in the sense that, okay, instead of saying I'm going to write a blog post and have it published by Friday, you say, okay, I'm going to follow a process, which is maybe writing for 30 minutes every single day, and then the blog post will unfold itself, right? So now I want to transition into the way I plan things now, which is kind of different, and I'm using leading indicators for this. If you've never heard of this word leading indicator, it's kind of a business term. If you study analytics or anything like that, you've probably come across this. But basically, a leading indicator is, think of it as a metric that predicts what's going to happen in the future. So for example, if you have a business, you know that the number of leads or the number of people interested in your products or services is an indicator of how much revenue you will generate in the future, right? So if you have 100 people interested in your products or services, that's better than having 10 people interested in your products or services. So the more people that you can get interested in what you do, the more revenue you will generate, right? Pretty simple. So leads is a leading indicator in that sense, right? So that's an example of a leading indicator in business. And there's tons of them that you can use and figure out. And we actually look at them every single week here on Tuesday. And as we're recording today, we actually had a meeting about that earlier. Now, a leading indicator doesn't guarantee a result, right? Just because you maybe went from 10 leads to 100 leads doesn't guarantee that you will generate more revenue. Most likely you will, but there's still many different factors that play out because it could be a seasonal thing. Maybe some leads don't pan out. Maybe something else broke down in the whole process going from I'm interested in your products or services to actually converting and selling. There's so many things outside of that. But you just know that if you just focus on getting more leads, naturally revenue, the actual result you're looking for, is going to follow, right? So that's a leading indicator. Now, you can apply the same concepts to your personal life as well. So I look at 5 leading indicators every single week as I'm planning my week. And those are, 1, thinking time. 2, meeting with influencers. 3, customer research. 4, finding and recruiting people to come work for us. And then 5, deep work. So those are the 5 leading indicators that I just mentioned. And we'll have them in the show notes so you can easily reference them whenever you want to. And so you might be wondering, okay, how does that work? Well, it's actually very simple. Whenever it's Sunday and I'm trying to plan my week, I basically look at one of those 5 metrics that I want to focus on and then say, okay, this upcoming week, I'm going to focus on the leading indicator, let's say meeting with influencers. I'm going to spend as much as I can on this particular leading indicator, which could be, let's say, lunches with influencers. This could be conversations with influencers. This could be something that eventually will result into some sort of payoff, right? And all I'm trying to do is every single week just push that metric up and up and up and up and up. And even though I won't get a result at the end of the week, I know that the more I do this, the bigger the payoff will be down the line whenever I'm seeking it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Do you kind of rotate? So you're like, okay, this week I'm doing thinking time. Next week I'm doing meeting with influencers. Or is it more like, this is just something I feel, you know, I really need to expand my influencers. So this is something I'm going to focus on. How kind of structured is that?
Yeah, I tend to rotate it every single week because I know I just want to be as well-rounded as possible. And 1 week, it's literally in the same order. Thinking time, meeting with influencers, customer research, finding, recruiting, and then deep work. Sometimes I'll shift it around depending how my schedule works out to be and also what we have going on at AE. Because as you know, sometimes it's crazy, crazy busy. There's just no time for customer research at that time frame. And then it's all about deep work. And other times, you know, things are a little bit slower and then we can spend more time on customer research, as I'm sure you've figured out this past quarter.
Actually, the customer research thing is another interesting or a good example of leading indicators. And most listeners would know about this, but some people will. I've basically spent the last couple months getting on the phone, which is always my favorite thing, but it was really, really great in this case. So getting on the phone with former Dojo members, so members who, for whatever reason, it just didn't work out for them because their life got busy or whatever. So I got on the phone with them, but the way we tracked that and the way we measured it to make sure that it was effective is instead of saying, at the end of all these calls, we need to have some sort of goal where we don't really know what this is going to lead to. Instead, what we did is said, okay, every sprint, because we do sprints here at Agent Efficiency, I'm going to do X number of calls with former Dojo members. And that worked out really, really well. We got so many great insights in it, and it was really powerful. But by tracking it as a leading indicator, we made sure we were always making momentum.
Mm-hmm. Because we want to make sure that there's something that we can track and measure to make sure that we're making progress. Because it's impossible to know if you're making progress unless you have some sort of measurement in place.
For sure.
So I want to go over the five things that I just mentioned earlier, because I want to make sure I clarify to everybody what that means and looks like. So you have a better understanding how an ideal week would look like as I'm planning stuff. So the first factor that I mentioned earlier was thinking time. And we actually have a podcast episode on thinking time about this, and we'll link to it in the show notes. So if you haven't listened to it yet, definitely do so, because I think it was one of the most powerful podcasts I've ever done. And I always say that every time I record. So take that with a grain of salt. But it's one of my favorites. And I think you've listened to it as well, Brooks, haven't you?
Yeah. And the funny thing about that is, and it's TPS 162. We will link to it, but if you're in your podcast app, it's TPS 162. And the interesting thing about that is it started as a company meeting where Tan was sharing his thinking time strategies around that. And I remember because I had to take my son to baseball camp that week. So I'm sitting there on a chair on a lawn watching my kid play baseball, but I was just totally engrossed into this presentation Tan was giving us. And so right away we all said to him, this has to be a podcast. We have to share this with our community because it was so good. So yeah, I really, really enjoyed it.
We actually also have a Dojo training module on this as well. So if you're part of the Dojo, go in, log in right now, go check it out, because it's one of the most powerful things we've ever taught. And I'm, in a strange way, kind of sad we're not selling it as a separate product, because I think it's so good. But we're adding it in there in the Dojo. So if you're part of the Dojo, go in there right now and consume it, and you'll enjoy it. If you're not part of the Dojo, you should definitely join and consider joining, because it's our private training library and you get to be part of an awesome community of other like-minded people, of other people who are listening to the podcast. And we have the whole Agent Efficiency team there. You get access to us, and you get all these training modules for a really low price. So if you want to join, you can go to theproductivityshow.com/dojo. I'm happy to see you in there, and definitely consume the thinking time module. So going back to thinking time, it's all about the idea of spending enough time thinking about problems and solutions, thinking about the challenges you have, thinking about the opportunities you have in front of you, and coming up with ways to address them. And as life gets busier, we often don't spend enough time thinking about stuff. So it's actually something I have to put in my schedule and say to myself, Tian, this upcoming week, I'm going to spend a lot of time thinking. I'm not going to spend a lot of time doing stuff. I'm literally just sitting down trying to solve problems. And as Agent Efficiency has grown, it actually has been more demanding on my part to start thinking about this sort of stuff where, okay, I have to think not just one or two steps ahead, but almost like five, six steps ahead, which sometimes means instead of being one quarter ahead, we have to be 2-3 years ahead. And in order to do that, I just need to literally step away from my desk, not do anything, and just solve and think about stuff and think about strategy and think about what we need to do, fix and solve before they even come up or as they are coming up. So that's really what thinking time is, really just setting aside time to think. And if you haven't listened to that podcast episode, TPS 162, go check it out right now because you're going to love that. So that's the first metric. The second one is meeting with influencers. So this idea comes from actually a book called Scaling Up. So this is a business book that we all follow here at AE. Everybody in the company has a copy, and I have like five copies at home, just in case people forget them when they come here and we do quarterly planning. And the whole idea here with influencers is that as you start growing, it's not about what you do or how you do things. It's who you know. It's all about the who question. So I'd never understood this as I was first starting off, but it really made a lot of sense over the last year or so as I start being more strategic about what we did here. And the whole idea is, as you start to grow a company, it's not about what I'm going to do next or how I'm going to do things. How am I going to implement this this online advertising strategy? Or what can we do next year to increase revenue? Or what can we do to increase customer satisfaction? Or how can we improve the churn rate? Or whatever, right? What actually happens is, as you start to grow, it's not about who or what, or about what or how, it's about who. Who can do this? Who is the person that we need to talk to that can do this? Or who is the person on the team that can figure this out? Or who is the person that we need to partner up with so that we can achieve this outcome? And if you listen to this for the first time, it might not make a lot of sense. And when I first heard it, it didn't make sense in my mind either. But to give an example, when we want to, let's say, put a live event together, right? We want to put a conference together at some point. We could all, especially the high fact finders on our team, we could all spend our own time doing research on, okay, how should we put a live conference together? What are some of the things we should look out for? And the immediate process, most of us, especially high fact finders, will apply is, okay, I'm going to read a book. I'm going to do some research on Google, and I'm going to just, you know, try to figure it out some shape or form on how we're going to do a live conference. And that's my default mode. But what I've learned is the question of who can do this or who can help us. So if you ask yourself the who question, I could say, okay, who can help us with this? This could be a person that we could hire who is maybe a veteran at organizing conferences. And maybe that's the person I need to look and hire to bring us on, to bring on, and then say, hey, person, we want to host a conference, go put it together, make it happen. And this person would do everything. Another version of the who question is, who can help us with this? I could say, go to my network or people that I know or find somebody and maybe pay them a consulting fee and say, hey, I would love to pick your brains for a couple hours a week and have you help us put a conference together, right? Or I could say somebody on my team and say, hey, Brooks, you're a smart dude. We need to host a conference. Go figure it out and let's make it happen. So now it's not me doing stuff anymore, but it's somebody else that is taking on the question of what do we need to do? How do we do things? When, where, and all that stuff. These are things I don't have to think about anymore. Somebody else is doing that right now. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I have a question for you about this, because I don't think this is a secret. You live in Austin, which is a pretty startup, tech, influencer heavy city. So there's so many people here that can are living there that can solve a lot of problems. Vancouver's like this too, where I live. And I know you're always meeting up with people, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But so there's always people in town, either live there or visiting, that you can meet up with. But many of our listeners are not going to live in a place like that. That's kind of like a nexus. So do you have suggestions for people, things people can do if they live somewhere where doesn't have a lot of these people locally?
Yes. And the beauty of this is called the internets, the interwebs. So instead of meeting people in person, which is obviously the best thing you could do, other things you could do is connect with people online. So a lot of people do this over email. They try to get to meet people over Skype. To give you an example, I've made a lot of connections with people that I've never met in person, but I have a really strong connection with them just because I started leaving blog comments behind on their podcast or on their blog posts and podcast episodes. I started to email them and say, hey, this was really good stuff. Thank you so much for sharing this. And then over time, you know, we built a relationship over email, and then we got on a call and we sort of like came connected that way. Other times I became connected to people through Facebook. So I met somebody in person and I asked them, hey, who do you think I should meet? Or do you know somebody that could help me with this? Could you introduce me to this person? They'll say, yeah, I'll do an email intro, or you know what? I can make a connection on Facebook, and then I'll start to connect with people on Facebook that way. And Facebook is really great that way because you can literally stay in touch with people without putting too much effort into it by just posting something, let's say once a week. And even if it's not related to them, at least they get to see it and you're at least on their radar, at least, right? And another example, and this is the perfect example, is Mike, you know, the Productivity Show host. He became connected to us because I met him on Twitter. We were just talking about stuff. I saw him posting there. I was like, oh, this is really cool stuff. And I saw his blog and I was like, okay, this is a smart dude. Like, he knows what he's writing about. So I sent him an email and I was like, Mike, you should, you know, do some stuff with us. He's like, okay, let's make it happen. And he started working part-time, doing some project stuff, and then eventually led to something full-time. And now he's one of the, you know, leading thought leaders in the space because we just made a connection on Twitter. So there's literally so many different ways to connect with people. Even if you can't do it in person, online is definitely one big channel that you can push. And the other thing I would say is if you are in a town where there aren't that many influencers, go to a lot of conferences and seminars because that's where you can meet people as well. Now, I still do this as well where, okay, as of this morning, I got confirmed to speak at StyleCon, or it's called Memfluential. And so it's a big conference, or as I like to call it, a protein fest of all men coming together, talking about fashion, style, and personal development. And it's kind of an interesting intersection, but really what it comes down to is personal development. And I'll be speaking at that event. And I got invited to that because I just met some people in the past at other conferences. And I met the organizer of that event maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And we just stayed in touch over email and such, and over social media. And then he just happened to think of me and said, hey, I would love to have you at this event. You should come speak. And I met this guy like just, you know, maybe half an hour, an hour at a conference. And we just had a good conversation and we just stayed in touch that way. So you just never know how things pan out that way. And again, that's one of this leading indicators as well. Like, if the more I spend going to conferences, the more connections I make, the better the payoff will be. But guess what? I don't know when that payoff is going to be. That person that I met 5 years ago, I had no idea I would be speaking at his event today, which is like literally galaxies away in terms of years. But and that's why it's also very difficult to put an ROI when you go to conferences and stuff like that.
Yep, for sure. When I used to work in corporate, we would do customer conferences and we would go to different events. And we'd have a booth, and it would be very difficult to assign an ROI to meeting prospects and meeting existing customers. And our marketing department would always try, but there's it's very difficult to put a dollar value on connecting in person with someone. You don't know what that's going to lead to later. So it's better to focus, again, like you said, on that leading indicator of people to talk to versus some ROI that may or may not be accurate at the time.
Exactly. And especially in our space, yeah, we have other thought leaders as well and people who carve out their own niche in the productivity industry. And I put a conscious effort to meeting everybody in that space as well, right? So for example, a couple of years ago, you and I met at WDS, World Domination Summit. We spent some time there. And that's where we met all the people in this space, like Mike Vardy and others. And I want to make sure I put enough time into that every single year to stay in touch with everybody, because who knows what's going to happen, right? Because we might collaborate at some point, we might not. But I know that the more time I spend doing that, the bigger the payoff will be. And so the key is, especially when it comes to investing money into conferences and seminars, like I said, it's very difficult to put an ROI into it. So you want to always play the long game. And that's what this whole planning we're talking about today is, you're playing the long game with everything, because everything that we're talking about today doesn't have an immediate payoff, right? Whether you've published that blog post or not by the end of the week, again, that's a tangible thing you can look for. But when it comes to all these like leading indicators we're talking about right now, you just don't have an immediate payoff. So it feels sometimes as if you're quote unquote wasting time because there's no immediate benefit. And as you know, our attention spans have become shorter and instant gratification has become a bigger thing, it's really difficult sometimes to succumb to that, but you kind of have to resist it and say, hey, you know what? I'm playing the long game here. The more thinking time I do, the bigger the payoff will be, the better problems will solve. You know, same thing with meeting influencers. And the third one, customer research, is the same thing. So customer research, this is the third leading indicator here that I'm tracking, is all about just staying interacting with your customers. So this means talking to people on the phone, meeting with your customers in person, talking to people that maybe aren't your customers, but potentially could be your customers. And so the whole idea is you always want to stay in tune with the marketplace. So this is a very CEO kind of thing where the CEO always has to be very aware of what's going on in the marketplace and what's going on with customers, what the preferences are now, what the preferences are going to be, where the future is being, you know, developed and where things are headed. And so the best way to do that is always being in touch with your customers. Now, we kind of have a secret weapon where, you know, we actually have something called Slack where all of our customers are hanging out and people are having a good time in the dojo there. And it's a great way to, one, do research there because people are having conversations about stuff and we get to learn about, you know, them a little bit more on a deeper level. But also those are great people to talk to and kind of hear them out and their stories and see, okay, how can we service them better? Like I said, we have a lot of customers. You know, we have over, I believe, like 10, 11,000 customers or something. And so there's a lot of people I still have to talk to. And it's in our best interest to always stay in touch with them and hear, you know, okay, you've bought all of our products. You know, you bought this course from us. You know, what did we miss? What went well for you? What didn't go so well? How can we make things better for next time? You know, is there any product that you want to have that we don't have? You know, what are some of the things we should be creating? So we always have to be in tune with our customers, and especially as the CEO, that is super, super important because you start to learn things that you would just never come up with. And I'm sure you realize that too. As you mentioned earlier, you spent a whole quarter every single week talking to customers. And I remember having that meeting with you last week, and it was kind of anticlimactic of how we summarized it, what we learned. But how many hours did you put into that?
A lot. Let's just say when we were assigning story points, which is a Scrum thing, let's just say we may have underestimated that a little bit. But yeah, it was a lot of hours, but it was super, super valuable. And I find that, or at least from my observation, I think the higher somebody goes in an organization, it's almost natural that they talk to customers less and less, and it becomes the frontline people that really have the pulse. But you were referencing earlier the book Scaling Up, and I remember that's one of the things it really hammers home is, if you're a CEO or a senior executive, you have to be spending a lot of your time talking to customers. Otherwise, things, and this is a long game thing again, otherwise, things are eventually going to start going off the rails if the senior people are not actually talking to customers.
Yep. And this is one of the reasons I really wanted to have you and Mike talk to a lot of customers this past quarter and previous quarters as well. And I'm sure in the future as well. And this is one of those interesting things where, you know, I could tell you like, hey, Brooks, I think it's a good idea to talk to customers. You should totally do that. You know, and you might say, okay, I've never done that, but maybe that makes sense. But now that you've gone through the process and you actually had a lot of these aha moments, now you understand, okay, I actually see the value in this as well. And now, you know, whenever we have this kind of conversation of, okay, we need to kind of figure out what we need to do next, you know, the number one source is talking to our existing customers and people that we want to service. And so kind of like from my point of view, the more buy-in I get from you and Mike, the easier it is to persuade you guys to say, hey, this is, I think, the right move to do.
Yeah. There's a lot of, like, it's definitely, if you are higher level, it's definitely valuable to talk to customers. But in your organization, and this is true no matter what level you are, it's really good or really important to make sure that pipeline of feedback is working its way through the organization. So if somebody in one part of the organization hears something from a customer, it makes its way through to you as the person who is using these leading indicators on customer research. So you have that information that you can then go and talk to customers with. So you got to have that internal information flow as well.
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up because that reminds me of something else. Part of customer research is not just talking to customers or people you possibly want to service, but it also means talking to people internally in the company and talking to them and seeing what they see. So for example, something that Steve Cook does really well, or Tim Cook, I should say, Steve Jobs, Steve Jobs and Tim Cook, Steve Cook, that's funny. So one of the things that he does is he'll sit down with customers as well on top of Apple employees that he talks to on a frequent basis just to take them out for lunch, you know, whether that's a support person, somebody in retail, somebody who's a VP. He talks to a different set of people within Apple just to see how they are doing, what they're learning about customers, because they're the ones on the front lines. They're the ones interacting with people. They're the ones interacting with customers. And so talking to them gives him insights as well in terms of what Apple should be doing internally, but also externally with customers. And so this reminds me that, you know, every now and then I have to also talk to the customer success team to make sure that, okay, what are you seeing that I'm not seeing? Right. So I want to spend time whenever I'm thinking about customer research, also talking to, you know, Donna, Marie, and the rest of the ladies that we have on the team and say, hey, what are you seeing that I'm not seeing?
Yeah. And if you're not higher level, if you are a quote unquote lower level, for lack of a better term, employee, you can use this too, where for internal people as well, you can have leading indicators of, I want to talk to people in different departments that I might not normally have information exchange with, and just make it part of your thing to, like you say, take somebody out for coffee, you know, grab 15 minutes in a breakout room or something like that, just to get the pulse of things. Because as your career is progressing, that's going to really, really help you having that more holistic view of things. And you can accomplish that by establishing a leading indicator now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So to wrap it all up and put a bow tie on this, again, doing customer research doesn't have an immediate payoff. And this is what I mean with playing the long game, is I can talk to customers for days and still not get anywhere. But at least what I'll get is insights. I get ideas. I get inspiration on what we potentially could do down the line. And by the time we get to our annual planning or quarterly planning, I can take all this wealth of information that I've accumulated from doing all these calls, meeting with people on the team, to then say, okay, I can now make an informed decision. This is the strategy now going forward. This is what we're going to do. So again, sometimes, you know, doing this sort of stuff doesn't feel like worth it because it's just a lot of grunt work. It's a lot of work in itself. But you just have to realize, like, this is the, you know, one of the few things you should be doing that is like the 80-20 of everything. Because when I do all these little things that don't have immediate payoff down the line, it's going to pay off big time. So you're just going to be very patient about all this stuff, right? So to quickly recap, we talked about thinking time as one of them, meeting with influencers. The third one was customer research. So the fourth one is finding and recruiting people to come work for us. So this, again, is very specifically for CEOs, people who are in management, especially. And it's the idea that, okay, in order for a business to grow, we need to hire and find smart people. So one interesting thing that's very fortunate for us is we have a lot of smart customers and people who follow us. And if you look at the team, most people who are on the team right now are existing readers, customers, or followers in some shape or form, including the person I'm talking to today here, Brooks. And Mike was that as well. And so we have the kind of advantage where we can hire from our own pool, which is kind of unique. Because if you're a construction company or something, I doubt it that you're going to find people wanting to come work for you because they follow your social media or your your marketing content. So we're very fortunate in that sense.
Yeah. And not to pump your tires here, but I would say that you are better at this than anyone I've worked with, in the sense that you're not thinking about the immediate need that we have right now. You are always looking for, hey, when we grow, like, who are these people that we can talk to now for three stages of growth down the road? And establishing that, you know, just having those conversations now, even if it's not the right time, because what a lot of people will do is they don't even think about who to hire until they get a, have a posting that they need, and then they start looking. But that is not the approach that you take for sure.
Yeah, and I've definitely been in that situation before where, okay, things just start to explode and things are breaking down, and we say, okay, we need to hire somebody right now. We need to have somebody helping us right now. And as you know now, like, I hate chaos. Like, I absolutely hate chaos. As soon as there's any form of chaos, I just lash out and go, hey, we need to fix this ASAP. This is not acceptable, because I just like to have things peaceful, orderly, and systematic. Right. So there's no room for chaos or stress in my life whatsoever. And we don't have to be if you're, again, strategic and you plan a little bit ahead. And this is all about planning. Right. So planning allows you to avoid those fires. It avoids all the stressful moments that you have. And just to put an example of this, we knew that we were going to hire a lot of people and a bunch of people recently. And I had a very strong suspicion that our technology was going to break down. And we had this, like, you want to talk about this, Brooks? Like, we had this, like, breakdown
of
technology. I don't
want to talk about it, but I will. Yeah. yeah. Every day we have a, as our listeners may know, every day we have a daily meeting. So it's a really quick 15-minute daily huddle. And we all get on Skype and talk about what we're going to be doing that day. And it's really, really effective. And sometimes we have technical challenges. And Tan even said, I bet this is not going to hold up once we have the new people starting. And sure enough, it did not hold up. So today, we used a different system, and it worked great. So that's a perfect example of how not being proactive, even though we really knew we needed to, it's just there was always other things to work on. But we all knew this was going to happen, and it happened. So this was a very un-AE scenario, and it came true. Yep.
Yeah, so a lot of thinking time is really about that sort of stuff as well.
Yeah.
And so I'm already thinking, okay, you know, a couple quarters ahead, like maybe 1 or 2 years ahead, like what's going to happen? And then again, I go back to the question of who. Who is going to help us? Who do we need to partner up with? Who do I need to get to know to make this happen? So part of that is meeting influencers. A big part of that is also finding people to come join us and recruiting people to come join us. So for example, I knew when Aaron left, I needed a new operational person at some point, right? I also knew that we needed like content experts. We needed people who already knew about productivity to help us develop more products and create amazing content. And what's funny is I'm pretty sure I reached out to you, was it maybe 2013?
Yeah, it was something like that. Yeah. That's when the conversation started. Yeah, probably that's 2013.
That's when the conversation started. And I said, Brooks, you should team up with us. You should join AE. And lo and behold, 4 years later, it actually happened.
Yep, that's a long game situation right there.
So that is just, you know, definitely a long game. But also, you know, that was the part of finding talent. And then part of it is also recruiting, right? So recruiting means, okay, once you find the talent, now you have to convince them to come join you. So I've learned over the years that some of the best people you hire are already working somewhere. Like, if you're looking for really smart, talented people, chances are they're already employed. So you have to spend time. I don't like this word, but I think it sums it up the best way. It's you have to wine and dine them, meaning you have to meet with them. You have to show them like, hey, this is a better situation. You know, if we work together, we can make a much bigger impact. There's so much more things we could do together. You know, there's a bigger impact that you can make. You have more autonomy. You have all these benefits that I think you would get if you work for us versus, you know, staying at your current position. right? So an example of this was with you, Brooks, right? Mm. So last year I was in Banff in Canada and I was doing a trip. And this was at the time when you and I had conversations about, okay, let's get serious about you joining the team, right? We're having conversations. And I knew that one of the obstacles was going to be convincing your family that this was a good decision. Because I know, you know, for any major life decision, you always want to consult your family with this and making sure that, you know, they're on board with it. And so I knew that, okay, if I flew out and came to see you and your family, I could make a better case that, you know, you joining the team would be a good idea. So I ended my Banff trip, and instead of flying home, I decided to come visit you. And I spent, I think, two nights with you.
Yep.
At your place, which I'm very grateful for. And, you know, I got to know you better. I got to know your wife better. I got to know your kids. You know, I went to your kids' training. you know, I hopefully convinced your wife that this was a good idea. I hope she saw that, you know, I'm a good guy. You know, I'm trustworthy. You know, we have a big idea and plan that we can take over the world and dominate and have fun at it at the same time. And hopefully by the time I left, you know, she was convinced that, hey, you know, Brooks, you should join AE. So I'm curious to hear, well, I actually know the outcome of that already. I'm curious to hear, like, from your perspective, did that work or do you think it was helpful?
Yeah, absolutely. Like you say, a lot of times it is, there's always, and I think sometimes people who are recruiting forget this, is a lot of times there are way more factors involved than just the work, right? It's everything that comes around the life. So yes, definitely it was a good strategy getting to know the family. My wife thinks you're a very nice young man. you bought a present for your mom, which she liked, being a mother herself. So that was well played. It was really, really good. And I just want to make one point about this is, you know, we're talking about finding and recruiting people to hire, but if you're not in a position to hire, if you're somebody who is not in that job situation, it can still be something similar and can still be a really good leading indicator, maybe trying to find people to join the company, because a lot of times, you know, you want to work with talented people. So if you're at a conference and you meet somebody, even if you're not the hirer, that can be a thing you can do, is try to find people to bring into the company. A lot of organizations have hiring bonuses. I know a friend of mine, he used to bring in lots of people to the companies we worked for. He was always looking for talent to recruit, even though he wasn't somebody who hired himself. So I know he actually brought me into two different companies. So I'm pretty sure my recruiting bonuses paid for his daughter's first year of university because he kept bringing me in. But that's something, even as a employee, you can still do to try and refer people. Even if there's no bonuses, it'll still help you in your job.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And right now I'm talking to a bunch of people as well. And even if, you know, things don't work out, then, you know, that's part of the game. But also, I think I have a hunch that a couple of people that I'm talking to right now will eventually work out. And so, you know, whether that's next month or 2 years from now, I think it's good to always stay in touch with people. So even if you're in a position right now where you can't hire people, or you don't have the financial resources to do so, you should definitely still spend time finding people that eventually might work for you, especially if you spend enough thinking about, okay, what's the next person I need to hire? Who is this person? Again, the question goes back to who. You'll start to see, okay, I probably need this person, need that person. By the time you need this person, if you didn't spend any time finding people, you're going to be in a world of trouble, as we mentioned earlier. So the sooner you start, the better. And it's one of those activities that doesn't have an immediate payoff. And so if you spend a couple hours a week on this, it feels like almost like wasted time. But again, you're playing the long game. So if you have the luxury to do it, definitely do so. If you don't have it, don't worry about it. You know, life moves on. You can always find people immediately if you need to. Maybe not the ideal person, but at least you can find somebody to help you out if needed. But for just the best case scenario, you want to start sooner than later. And it's funny you mentioned the hiring bonus. I was actually, one of the things I was thinking about as part of my thinking time as well is finding a recruiting talent is all about finding new people, but a big part of it is also keeping your existing people, right? It's kind of like with customers, you can attract a lot of new customers, but if you can't keep them, you're not really growing either. So as the CEO, you also have to spend a lot of time, and this is part of thinking time, but also recruiting people. It's like, how do you keep the existing people happy to make sure that they stick around and that, you know, that they're in a position to succeed? So that's a lot of thinking time and recruiting, quote unquote, as well, because you want to make sure that they're happy. But then the hiring bonus, this is something I was just thinking about the other day, something I want to introduce to you guys next year, because I think that'd be a huge driver for our growth as well, making sure that you guys get paid anytime you reward somebody to come join the team. So if you want to pay for your college fees for your sons, this is definitely the way to go.
He's entering high school, so it's time to start time to start hiring now.
Yeah, let's make it happen. So yeah, so finding recruiting talent is number four. And again, I spent a lot of time on this. I want to make sure I spend enough time on this, and I hope you do so as well. So fifth one is deep work. So deep work, we've talked about this numerous times on the podcast, and we have a bunch of episodes on this, so we'll link to them on the show notes as well to make sure that you understand what deep work is. If you don't know what that is, it's basically uninterrupted time to do some of your best work possible. So we had Cal Newport, the author of Deep Work, on our podcast not too long ago, and we had a bunch of episodes internally as well, talking about deep work and how you can implement this. So I'm not going to dive too much into this, but the whole idea of deep work in itself is that, okay, if I can spend enough time doing deep work, then I can create a lot of value. So as the CEO, oftentimes you set the tone for the rest of the company, right? So if the CEO goes fast, the company is going to go fast. The CEO sets the pace, everybody's going to follow that pace, right? So as the CEO, you kind of set the culture, you set the tone, you set the pace for everything. And if the person at the top is not creating value, is not contributing in meaningful ways, then it's very difficult to convince everybody else on the team to do that, right? So that's one of the trickle-down effects to make sure that, okay, as the CEO, you can't be just like, you know, sipping pina coladas on the beach and expect everybody else to do the work. You also, as part of being a good leader, have to show that you're willing to put in the work as well. So I have to schedule time around that to make sure that I consistently do that, right? So that's one thing. But also, some of the things that I can create, and only I can create, is something that I have to literally schedule time for. Because if I leave it up to chance, then it's probably not going to happen, because I'll have meetings coming up. People always want to meet me for lunch or dinner. There's also a lot of social events going on. I could spend hours and hours talking to customers, finding people, recruiting talents, doing my own research, being a high fact finder. So if I don't schedule time for deep work, it's just never going to happen. So oftentimes, depending where we are in the quarter or the year, I'll focus on doing more deep work. And then you'll see that in, for example, in certain sprints, right? In certain sprints, I'll be contributing more. In some sprints, I don't, because then I do all this other stuff. So doing deep work and scheduling that, super, super important.
Again, we're not going to dive into deep work as we talked about a lot, but an example of a leading indicator for deep work, I guess, would be what the number of hours per week that you're going to be spending on it. Is that kind of what you think
of? Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah. So just the more time, just like with thinking time, the more time I spend on deep work, the more value I create, even though I might not know what that value is just yet. Right. So it could be writing something. It could be creating something. Oftentimes it is something associated with something inside the sprint, but sometimes it's not. And so I just know that the more focused time I have, the better, for example, my content is, the better the podcast episodes are going to be, the better writing is going to be. So again, the leading indicator for this is simply time spent.
Got it.
Cool. So I hope by now you have a very clear idea of how the planning process looks like. So again, the five leading indicators I always look for is thinking time, measured in time. Meeting with influencers is simply how much effort am I putting into reaching out and talking to people that could be helping us down the line. Customer research, just how many customers do I talk to on a frequent basis? Finally, recruiting people to come work for us. So how much time am I spending just reaching out to people, talking to them, and then deep work, just uninterrupted time to focus on creating value. So every single Sunday night, I just sit down and say, okay, what's the big leading indicator I want to focus on this upcoming week? And so I'll pick one of them. Usually I rotate, but depending on where we are in the quarter or in the year, I might take one over the other and then say, okay, this is what I'm going to pick. Now, what do I need to do this upcoming week to make sure that I'm spending time or pushing this leading indicator? And what's interesting about this is that, one, again, I cannot stress this enough. It's going to feel like you're not creating any sort of value because you're just literally just doing stuff, not knowing when it's going to pay off. So if you feel that way as you start doing this process, just be reassured that it's okay. It's completely normal. Just like when you first start meditating, it feels really weird and you just feel like it doesn't work. It's the same thing here. It just feels really unnatural. So be okay with that. Then I literally just try to put it on my calendar as much as possible. So if I'm going to do deep work, I'm going to schedule it. If I'm going to meet with influencers, I'm going to try to spend time reaching out and setting blocks of time for that. Or if I already have, you know, lunches or dinners set up, I count that as meeting with influencers and making sure that Nicole, my EA, is up to date and making sure that's all confirmed, all the places are booked, you know, and all that stuff, right? Customer research, same thing, booking and interviewing people, talking to them, trying to spend some time on that, and utilizing all the resources we have for them. So literally just every Sunday, I try to plan 1 week ahead. And then by Friday, once the week is over, look at my scorecard and see, okay, what did we accomplish? How can I, you know, make tweaks and do things better for next time? Make a note of it in my Evernote. And then whenever I get back to it, I'll look at that note and see, okay, this didn't go so well this time. Maybe next time I need to do this. And then we make improvements to it, which, you know, is one of our core values, Kaizen, continuous improvements.
Exactly. One thing I do want to mention, this is something the folks in the dojo have been talking about, is that leading indicators don't just have to be for work stuff as well. You can do leading indicators for your personal life if you have something that's important to you. So Curtis gave a few examples, how many nights a week to hang out with the kids, how many days we go on as a family on a hike in the backcountry, how many nights a week we go to the kids' activities, and just making sure that those are done as kind of a, and that's a very long-term game, making sure to cement that relationship with your family later, having leading indicators now, because sometimes it can be hard to find the time for this stuff. So this is a great way to do it if you're somebody who finds yourself in a really busy situation.
Yeah, you can, again, like I said at the beginning, you can apply all these ideas that we talked about today. And even if you're not a CEO, you can take the same principles and apply them to your own life. So taking back, going back to the relationship example, if you put a priority on time spent with your relationships, whether that's family, friends, people that you know in your society, maybe a church or some sort of organization you're part of, it's worthwhile to take that same framework and then say, okay, what's a leading indicator for that? So some of the things that Brooks just mentioned is one of them. But you can come up with your own leading indicator, knowing that, okay, if a leading indicator is something that you can push up, it's a metric, it's some sort of measurable thing that you can push forward, and then the result of that is going to be something else, right? So again, example I talked about earlier is if you want to increase revenue in a business, a leading indicator of that would be the number of leads you have, right? So if I want to meet, for example, with meeting with influencers, if the result I'm looking for is meeting 10 influencers, the number of lunches I have or the number of calls I make reaching out to people could be a leading indicator for that, right? So finding a leading indicator can be a little bit tricky, and there's plenty of resources online. But you have to be very clear of what is the outcome that I'm looking for and how can I push something over and over and over again that will eventually allow me to get there. And that is whatever that thing is that you're going to push, that's the leading indicator. And it's not always easy to come up with one. It's not always super obvious. So it's worthwhile to spend some time on that, because I even I had to spend a lot of time thinking about my leading indicators, but it's going to be different for everybody just a little bit. So it's worthwhile to spend some quote unquote thinking time on all your personal leading indicators.
Question for you. Do you, some people keep a, and this is something that's talked about a lot in, for example, the 12-week year, some people keep a scorecard of their leading indicators. Do you do anything like that to track how your leading indicators are doing? Like, do you go back and review, or are you just more future focused? This is what I want to do for the next week and kind of move forward that way.
Yes, I keep a spreadsheet actually where I have all my five leading indicators on there and then the weeks I've done them. And then I just keep track of that. So 1 week I might spend, let's say, 5 hours on deep work. Another week it might be six, or another week it might be two. So I'm just tracking that over time. And then every time I'm planning, I basically try to beat my last number. So if I spent maybe 5 hours on thinking time last week or the last time, then the next time I'm doing it, I'm trying to beat that number. So I'm always trying to beat my own metrics. I'm never trying to beat, you know, other people's numbers, the industry average or whatever. I'm always beating my own numbers. So I think it's super important mindset, because I see a lot of people always comparing their businesses or themselves to other people. And I totally get it. You know, it's what we all do. But really what you should be focusing on is your own numbers, your own metrics, right? When you first start out with, for example, weightlifting, you don't care really what the guy next to you is benching. You don't really care. You all you got to focus on is your own numbers. Same thing here, right? So if I'm spending 8 hours a week on thinking time, that does not mean that you have to immediately go to 8 hours as well, right? Focus on getting 1 hour in, and then 2 hours in, and then three, and then over time you'll get to eight and then even surpass me. But in the end, it doesn't really matter. So I like to track my own numbers and beat my own numbers every single time I work on them.
Do you think there's a certain point or level where someone should make that shift from process thinking to leading indicator thinking? Is there a scenario where maybe it would be better staying at the process level, for lack of a better way to put it? Or is it something that anyone can do?
Yeah, this is something I'm still kind of trying to figure out when the best time is for either scenario or either approach. Because one, with the leading indicators, again, you're playing a long game. So some of the payoffs are not going to be until maybe 2-3 years from now. And so it's kind of difficult to say, hey, you should follow a process-oriented goal versus like a leading indicator, because it depends on what time frame you want to play on. So if I had to really summarize it, I would say if you need something achieved within a year, I would go with the process route. At least you have influence and control on what that process looks like and what the goal is, because the process should be aligned with whatever goal you want to achieve. So if your goal is to say, let's say, lose X amount of body fat percentage, lose amount of weight, then you can create a process around that and you make iterations in between, right? So that's kind of like what the 12-week year is almost, is you have a goal, you have a vision, you make tweaks as you go and you follow a process as much as you can. With leading indicators, I would say if you're playing the long game, so that means over a year, and you're okay with putting in the time and effort and not seeing any results within a year, then that's a great way to go. But again, everything has to be in place to make that worthwhile. So meaning your financial situation has to be pretty good, because you want to, it's very difficult to play the long game if your financial situation is not that great. And that's just, you know, real talk. Like if you're stressed about finances and money, it's just very difficult to think about the future, because you're just focused too much on the stress about how do I meet payroll? How to provide for my family? How do I make sure we do this and this and this, right? So then I would say don't do the leading indicator stuff, because the payoff is just not worthwhile just yet. If you're in a good financial place and again, you're playing for something over a year, I think that's then a good time to say, okay, let's start playing the long game and just put in the time there and effort to getting the results, hopefully somewhere down the line.
Gotcha.
All right, guys. Well, that's pretty much all I have for today. So I really hope you enjoyed today's episode. I know it was a little bit different and a little bit more advanced, but you know, that's what we're here for. We're here to provide you actionable content that you can use and implement and stuff that you've never heard anywhere else, because that's what we do here. We always want to make sure we give you actionable content that you can provide and implement right away to yourself, people around you, and the people that you care about. So if you liked today's episode, I would love for you to dive deeper into this material that we have, because we have so much more stuff that we haven't talked about today, and it's all in the dojo. It's our private training library and community. So if you want to be around like-minded people and you want to learn some of this advanced stuff, I highly recommend you join the dojo. And I'm there every single day. People, others like you, are in there on the forums and in the community that we have going on. They're all sharing fantastic content, what's working for them, what's not working for them. So you get to learn firsthand what's going on and what's working, what's not working. I would love to have you in there. Brooks is in there as well. Mike is in there as well. And you get direct access to us. So if you want to join, you can go to theproductivityshow.com/dojo. And it'll be just $1 for your first month. So for just $1, you get to be part of our team, part of our community, part of the training library that we have going on, where we dive deeper into some of the concepts that we talked about today. So again, just go to theproductivityshow.com/dojo, and I hope to see you in there. And I hope you, again, enjoyed today's episode. We have all the links and everything else we discussed today in the show notes. You can go to theproductivityshow.com/164. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next Productive Monday.